Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to the live show that sounds like the ghetto. That's right. We're recording live. We're not recording live. We're broadcasting live. Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Yeah, baby.
Woo! It's the open forum show. So we're here to field your questions. It puts us on the hot seat, and we feel the pressure.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, there's no getting out of this because we're here live. We can't edit this if we give a dumb answer like we can do on the other show. And frankly, we're a little lazy. We don't edit that anyways.
We're too busy.
Well, true enough. But, yeah, this is awesome. We love open forum show. Of course, it's your opportunity to send in your questions. We've got lots that came in via email. You can also, of course, call in live. You know, if you're listening there and you're thinking, oh, are they going to get to my question or not? Well, the best way to be certain is to call in live. We can try and pick you up. The number to do that, 646-668-8326. Hit 1 once you're on there. And then I think Mark's running the studio there too. He's a jack of all trades. You know, he's the lawyer, the CPA.
Yep.
He's also the host and the studio tech.
Yeah, I'm playing studio tech. And if you and if you do have a live question, you press number 1 when you call in on your phone, silent your or mute your computer, and press the number 1. I'll get a little indicator that you want to come on live, and I'll jump off the air and get your first name and what your question is generally about or whatever, where you're from, and then we'll bring you right out. It's kind of like car talk, you know. You're just going to come out. So be respectful. Sometimes about once a year we have some guy that just gets on and with Tourette's and just starts rambling off swear words just to be funny. But that, you know, it's forgettable. So we're hoping for a good show today.
Right. So if you're thinking about that, don't do it. And if you're new to the show, though, you know, this is, we do this once a month. We also have shows with guests and specific topics that Mark and I pick each week, and you can follow that at refreshyourwealth.com. Check out prior shows and also sign up for our newsletter where we have free articles, tax tips and deadlines, legal tips, and we also announce the shows that are coming up. So you can get that again at refreshyourwealth.com.
And finally, if you do have a question today and you don't feel like calling in, you can always email it to Mark, M-A-R-K, or Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com. So Mark at kkoslawyers.com or Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com. We may not get to your question because we've already got a bunch that came in after our newsletter, which goes out every Tuesday. And so that's when a lot of people are alerted and informed, so they hurry and get their questions so they know they get in the lineup. We do need to mention our sponsors today. Rockstar did not send us our complimentary case of drinks. We need to talk to our rep. If you're listening, Rockstar, please get in contact with us. So Monster, Matt, I guess you've got a new co-pilot there today on your desk.
Yeah, I got the Monster Energy Ultraviolet. So Kevin Kennedy, a lawyer here in the Phoenix office with me, he's a big energy drink guy. Not really my thing, but I dipped into this one today. It is delicious and refreshing, kind of like the Refresh Your Wealth show. Monster Energy Ultraviolet. Wow, it's so good.
Woo. And I'm out on the road speaking at a conference down here in California at the New Wealth Advisors Club, and I just couldn't get a hold of my Rockstar, so I had to go with a Monster Ultra Zero, the silver can with engraving, which has a nice feel to it. You really feel important when you're drinking that thing. So,
Yeah, it's so. Like you're like a king or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Well, enough of us screwing around. For those that listen to our show regularly, yes, we try to keep it light. We try to keep it enjoyable. And so we're going to just jump right into our questions for the day and see how this goes. So we've got a question from Linda, and she brings up the topic of trust. She says, what is the proper way for real estate to be titled when it is held by a trust? Should the property be titled Rose Family Trust or Debbie Rose, trustee of the family trust? Are these equivalent? Or is there some other better way for the property to be titled that is clearly owned by the trust, not the individual? Well, Matt, you want to give this a little shot? I'll throw in two words maybe or 2 cents.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great question. So just keep in mind your trust should be owning your home. If you have rental properties, we typically want the trust to own the LLC that owns the rental properties. But for real estate that the trust is going to directly own, really there's two different ways to do it, and it depends on your trust document. Your trust document is going to have a section in there that's going to indicate how title should be vested. And the two ways that Linda mentioned are the two options you have. Now, generally you can list it, you can say the trust name, but you also could list the trustee, or you could list trustee holding it for the benefit of the trust. Either way is appropriate, and title companies will recognize either in terms of transferring the ownership or county recorder's offices. So you could list it either way in the trust name directly. Typically still list your name as trustee after that, and you'll obviously be signing the deed as trustee as well when you're transferring back out. Or you can list it in the name of, let's say, Matt Sorensen, trustee of the Matt Sorensen, you know, Family Revocable Trust. Either one works.
Yep, and I will concur with my amazing partner there. But Linda, let's take it to another level. To answer your question, they're both equivalent. And the constant in Matt's answer is that the trust name has to be listed. Whether you have the trustee name or not is a variable that doesn't matter. But here's what lately, in the last couple of years, we've been recommending more. Don't list the trustee name. More privacy is obtained by simply recording the trust name only. And more often, our clients are using a more indiscriminate, mysterious trust name. So when I created my trust 15, 20 years ago, it was Mark and Jennifer Kohler Family Trust. You know, it's just like, hey, world, this is my property. Come call me, you know. And nowadays, I'd like to change that to, you know, the Blue Sky Trust, the end. You know, so they don't know who the trustee is on public record, and they don't, my name is not in the trust name. We can easily modify a trust and change the name. Some of you would like to change the trust name on your documents, but that's just a suggestion. Go with the shorter. Go more for more privacy. Just an idea. So,
yeah. Dude, good little tip there.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to pose a couple questions to my amazing partner here, and regrettably, I shouldn't say regrettably, but boy, Matt Sorensen, my amazing partner, author of the book Self-Directed IRA Handbook, maybe it's the type of reader for Matt's book, but we get, I would say, a larger spattering of IRA questions for our open forum show, and I need my followers out there. Come on, give me some love. Ask me some just basic generic tax questions, because we've got a lot of IRA questions today, and so we're going to be leaning on you, Matt, a little bit.
I'll do my best.
All right. So this is a tough one, too, so maybe I'm just going to sit back and relax. Okay, this is from Teresa. She says, I bought a home in 2012 and fixed and flipped it a year later. I took a loss. I did this in my IRA. My custodian is sending my 5498 from showing the original value and not the loss, and also the reduction due to paying the LLC $800 yearly. How do I get this corrected? Does this, and that, she goes, how do I get this corrected? I don't even know if she needs to correct any, I don't know. Matt, what's your take on this custodian form, and why would they be sending in this, and what should some of our listeners be looking for when they're doing deals in their IRA and there's a loss?
Okay, now it sounds like her IRA owns an LLC, and the LLC bought and flipped the property. She's been paying the fee for the LLC, it sounds like, in California. You know, you guys have to pay $800 for your LLCs there. They're zero in Arizona year to year, just letting you know that. Doesn't help you in your question here, but a little tidbit. Yes, great question. So this form 5498, that is the form your IRA custodian is going to file to the IRS every year. And there's a few things that they put on that form 5498. It'll say, here's how much you contributed for the year, here's how much you took out as distributions, and here's the current value of your account. And it's as of December 31st each year. So if you have an LLC, what happens with the custodians is they're just going to list the value of the LLC when you set up the LLC to begin with, which it sounds like is what they just kept it stuck at. So if you've had a loss in that, or frankly, if it's gone up, let's say you had a gain, you need to adjust the value of that LLC with your custodian each year. This is called an annual valuation. Many custodians are going to be militant about getting this from you to say, what's your LLC worth now? And they'll still be on you until you update it. Some of them are a little more passive about it, and until you update the value of it, they don't really stress about it. So what you can do, and all the custodians have a form for this, you'll just need to update the value of the LLC. It's called an LLC valuation. Some of them have a worksheet you can do it yourself. Some of them require you to have a third party do it. We actually do these valuations in the law firm if you need some third party to do it. And what you'll need to provide there is just information on what's happened in the LLC. So if your LLC has a bank account, it doesn't have any real estate anymore, and that's all you have right now, just provide the bank statement for the bank account for the end of the year showing what the cash is in there. If you have real estate owned in there and a bank account, then you'll need to get a value of the real estate. A lot of custodians will accept a Zillow estimate on these annual valuations, or you could just have a real estate agent do a quick comparative market analysis. They can do that in 10 minutes to tell you what the property's worth. So all you got to do an annual valuation. You can update that value. Now, it's really important that you do that on an annual basis just because you want to make sure that your value is getting tracked properly for distribution purposes later or if you're going to do a conversion or anything like that.
All right. Well, now that our listenership is completely asleep and we probably caused two car accidents, let's get back to a question. Oh, God.
Hey, it had to be done. Maybe. I mean, I just
talk about taking your medicine. Man, I don't know if a spoonful of sugar would even help, but that was brutal. Well, you IRA followers, we love our fearless leader, Matt Sorensen. So if you ask an IRA question, you're going to get one. So get an answer. Okay, so this is a question from Mary. Now, this question, believe it or not, actually affects more Americans. So I think our listeners might get a little something out of this one. All right. Mary said, I was watching one of your videos, and you mentioned the homestead exemption. By the way, you look like you've lost 10 pounds and look quite sexy in your video. No, she didn't say that. I was hoping for that. I'm open to those types of, you know, comments. If you want to pose a question for the show, you know.
Mark's out here soliciting. He's fishing for compliments right now, by the way.
Anytime. It only helps grease the wheels over here. All right, the wheels of justice move slow if you want to get your question answered. Mary said, if a property, she goes, you mentioned the homestead exemption. Okay, homestead exemption. Anybody out there listening that owns a home, you want to know about this. This is your personal residence. She says, if a property owner that's single and owns their property outright should get sued, how is the difference of the property value and the homestead exemption calculated? Would they go by the tax assessed value or the price paid for the property, or are they able to have someone say that the property is worth such and such? And then she goes on and says, how's this work? And if they force the sale of your home, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So let's start big picture here for 2 seconds. Homestead exemption. All the states in America have a homestead exemption on the books that says if you get sued, and someone gets a judgment against you. Maybe you were texting and driving and ran over 3 kids on a crosswalk, whatever it is, and there's a huge lawsuit and they come after you. They can get most everything you own, but we're going to protect some sort of value of your home, some sort of exempted amount. And even when we force the sale of your home to get these 3 families paid for your bad driving, we're going to give you this little exemption amount to go out and restart your life, because we don't want to kick you to the curb with nothing. We're going to give you at least a little bit to go out and restart your life. That's the purpose of the homestead exemption. It's kind of a cousin to the bankruptcy laws, but it's separate from that. It just says, here's the exemption that when we go and there's no tax assessed value or whatever, when they force the sale of your home at closing, they're going to pay off the mortgage, write a check to you for the exemption amount for that state, and say, good luck, here you go, and then whatever's left, they're going to give to the creditor, the person that sued you. That's how this homestead exemption works. Now, here's where it gets, you know, wild and crazy. Every state's different on this amount. You might be down in Arkansas with a $10,000 exemption, but it does cover your mobile home. Pretty sweet. Or in Florida, down in Florida, it's unlimited. In Texas, the wild, wild west, unlimited. This is why O.J. Simpson, right after his fateful drive in his white Bronco down I-5, quickly moved to Florida, because when the lawsuit hit, they couldn't touch his home in Florida. Unlimited homestead exemption. In most states, this is around $50,000 to $100,000. Some states, it's as high as $200,000 or $300,000. And so you want to know what the homestead exemption is in your house and go, maybe I've got too much equity in my home. Maybe I don't want to be exposed. And if you live in California or New York or Illinois and you've got this million-dollar house and you've paid off your mortgage and you get sued, they may only throw you a check for $100,000 and you lose the rest of your money in your house. This is where asset protection comes in. So anyway, I could go on, Matt, anything you want to add? There's your homestead exemption in a nutshell.
No, dude, love it. Now when OJ changed his residence, though, to the Nevada State Penitentiary for his Nevada shenanigans or whatever, he lost the homestead exemption, right? Because it only counts for your residence. And he ain't living there anymore.
When he changed residency. Now, I will say this. The state of Florida was very embarrassed about this. It got a lot of salacious news media coverage. Yeah. On
they also got
OJ
all did. The – I remember they got all the MCI WorldCom executives that had all the securities fraud stuff. They all went there and bought mansions, too. I remember that.
Yeah, so it's Florida changed the law because of this. They were embarrassed and they said, "What the heck?" You know, so they wanted to make it not as easy to pull that off. So they've changed that process so it's not as liberal. But anyway, so if you live in Florida, you have to be there for so long and this and that. You can't just pop into town and pull this off. But, every state's a little different. You want to know what the – and sometimes this exemption is not automatic. You've got to file something with the state. Believe it or not, in my two books, Lawyers Are Liars and the Tax and Legal Playbook, I have a table in the back that tells you what the exemption is in your state and how you get it. So you can very easily purchase that book on Amazon, have it on Kindle within minutes, go to the table in the back, look at it, and there are some other wonderful chapters. So we can help you figure that out. So.
All right, Mark. Now I got a healthcare question for you from Rick.
Okay.
So Rick wrote in, he says, if I join an LLC as a percentage partner, do I lose the personal deductions, healthcare, HSA, home office deductions, et cetera, that I would have as a single LLC owner? Since we are just starting, we will not have a central office, computers, et cetera. This is from Rick worrying about all these deductions that he may otherwise take that are somewhat personal if he joins an LLC as a partner.
Well, this is a tricky one. Let's just set aside the healthcare variable for a moment. And let's say any of you out there.
That's what Congress has been doing, too, by the way. Go ahead, though.
Paul Riley, don't bring up the word healthcare. I'm going to jump off the side of the Capitol here. We're just going to see him, skydiving.
Well, let's just set that aside for now.
Yeah. So here's the deal, folks. If you're going to partner with someone in a small business and you don't own 100% of that business, the deductions are a little tricky because you and your partner are going to claim income in your partnership and take write-offs for your partnership expenses, but what about your own cell phone, your own home office, your own dining and travel, and some of the things that you're paying for that your partner doesn't want to help cover, but you think, hey, I deserve a write-off for this. Those are unreimbursed partnership expenses. And there is a line item for that. It's on a Schedule E, second page. Your accountant should know right where to put them. I want you to track them on an Excel spreadsheet. You know, QuickBooks is always an important piece of any small business owner's long-term plan. But at bare minimum, have them on a spreadsheet and give them to your accountant at the end of the year. You won't lose them. There's other clunky problems here because if this is an operational business, you could have self-employment tax issues, and we're going to want to try to get these partners probably into an S corporation. And so you've got bigger issues than fish to fry here. But the bottom line is you're not going to lose those write-offs. Keep track of them. When it comes to the HSA, anybody listening here, your health savings account deduction is on the front page of your tax return. It has nothing to do with your small business. You just have to have the right type of insurance. There are other health care strategies of writing off your insurance premiums or health reimbursement plans, all covered under Kohler Care. Maybe you've heard of Obamacare. There's a close second plan called Kohler Care. And that is also a chapter in my book, Tax and Legal Playbook. But I've got 9 different ways to save money under health care. So I would recommend our listener look that up and tackle your health care as kind of a separate issue. But track your expenses, folks. It doesn't matter. You're in a partnership. Good. Man, I got an IRA question for you.
All right, cool. Let's hit it up. Dude, I got a stack of IRA and 401k questions too. I'm sorry, this is what the people want. It's what the people want.
That's right. Got to give the masses what they want. All right, this is from Mark. He says, "Hi, I have a rental property that I purchased. That I purchased using my IRA." Wonderful strategy. Many of you listening, this is why people love our show, is we're out there taking over Main Street, getting rid of Wall Street in our lives. Folks, this is where your retirement money should be, in your control, not Wall Street's control. Oof, don't get me started. So this gentleman says, I bought a rental property with my IRA. I'm getting a better return than my crappy mutual fund. Oh, he didn't say that. Currently, I use a property manager to handle everything. Additionally, I have a separate bank account for all the IRA transactions. My question is, can I transfer my IRA rental into an IRA LLC that I can manage? And whoa, he threw me for a loop. You can hear me pause. He said, additionally, I have a separate bank account for all the IRA transactions. Mark, what are you talking about? You can't do that without an IRA LLC. Where did that come from? I have a separate bank account. You don't have a bank account. Your IRA bought a property. Call your IRA custodian to manage that property. But then he says, can I form an IRA LLC that I can manage? Well, it sounds like you're already trying to do it, Mark. You got to clean this up. This could be very prohibited type stuff. So there's a way to handle this, Matt. Set Mark straight.
Yeah, absolutely. We can set up an LLC, have your IRA own it 100%, and then have the custodian deed the property from the IRA into the LLC. Then you're working kosher how you should be right out of the LLC, having certainly a separate bank account for the LLC to receive that income and expense on the property. I'm hoping what Mark's referring to there is maybe the property manager has a bank account for that property that they use for the income and expense. I don't know. But, yeah, you shouldn't be having any bank account that you have control or access to for the IRA unless you're using an LLC, because that account would have to be associated with you somehow personally, and we definitely don't want that. So, but, yes, we can get you on the straight and narrow. Give us a call. We'll get it figured out.
All right. Matt, why don't you head over to Ed's question here, too. Another IRA DB plan question. Maybe set the stage for some of our listeners that have never heard of a DB plan. Set the stage for us if you could.
All right. So this is from Ed. He says, good morning, Mark and Matt. Can someone who is self-employed with no employees outside of spouse and family set up a self-directed defined benefit plan? Can this person stuff more money into the DB plan than a defined contribution plan? All right. Now we're talking about DB, defined benefit, defined contribution, sometimes called DC plan. These are all super technical terms here. The answer to Ed's question is yes. Let me give you some detail here. Now, what he's talking about here is Ed's self-employed, presumed, and wanting to think about how can I maximize how much money I can get new contributions into a retirement account. Now, the best option where you're going to get the most money is a DB plan called defined benefit plan. Another word for this is a pension. Now, a pension, the way it works is you put in money based on the amount of retirement money you want to receive when you reach retirement age. So for someone older, in particular in their 40s or 50s, who is closer to retirement, they can throw a lot of money into these DB plans and really max them out. And particularly if you don't have any other employees where you need to do matching, man, we've seen clients put hundreds of thousands of dollars as new contributions, which they're getting a tax deduction for, into a DB plan, which you can also self-direct. So yes, DB plan is certainly an option for someone looking to make large contributions, and also, yes, you can self-direct it.
Okay. I love it, Matt. Excellent. Excellent. Great. Summary answer there. So good stuff. All right, I'm just opening up questions here. This is how it works. It's the Wild West, so I hope we can pull this off. This one seems to have a little bit of a retirement twist to it, so Matt, I may send it your way here. This is from Lombardo. It says, I'd like to know if it is possible or other way to use CalPERS or CalPERS retirement account to invest in real estate before retirement. The idea is not to wait to reach retirement age to use those funds to invest. I would like to start investing my CalPERS fund now. He said, I'll be at your December 2nd event. And I did not throw that in myself. So, I got to give a shameless plug. This fall is my 5 events around the country. And these 5 events are only $150 right now, includes lunch, 6 hours, a powerful tax and legal planning. And we're doing Chicago, Sacramento, Seattle, Orange County, and Honolulu. The December 2nd event that Lombardo's talking about is in Orange County. And I only have about 75 seats per location. It will sell out. So register now, get your flight plans done. The price goes up to $200 soon. And you can just go to my website, markjkohler.com, markjkohler, KOHLAR.com, to get registered. And this is the 7th annual Rockstar Tour. So I want to check it out. Okay, so Matt, this is someone that lives in California, obviously, because they're talking about CalPERS.
Yeah.
What do you tell someone that says, I want to invest and self-direct my CalPERS retirement?
Okay, so the problem when you're with CalPERS, which is, your existing employer, you probably work for the state or a local government agency in California. And CalPERS is essentially a 401k plan for government employees in California. And so you're putting money in, but you're restricted on where you can invest based on what CalPERS investment options you have. This is like anyone, if you're kind of working at a large company and you have a 401k plan, whether you're at Google or you're at Dunder Mifflin and you're on the company 401k plan, doesn't matter. As long as you're still employed there or until you reach until you reach 59 and a half, you're stuck. You can only invest in the investment options that they have. You can't roll your money out, unfortunately. So if you leave your employment there, you change jobs or you retire, you can obviously move your money out and you could move it to a self-directed IRA custodian. Or if you reach retirement age of 59 and a half, you have the option to roll money out as well. But as long as you're still employed, sorry, unfortunately, you're stuck. I have a rollover chart, by the way. I just put out an article. It's the top 10 self-directed IRA questions with answers. This, I think, was like question 2 or 3 in there. I have a rollover chart for every situation someone may have that explains when you can roll out and do a self-directed IRA. So check that out for more detail. But sorry, sounds like you're going to be stuck in CalPERS until you leave employment there or reach retirement age of 59 and a half.
All right. Love it.
All right, Mark,
okay.
I got a question here from Judy on HSAs if
okay.
you want it.
Yeah, I'll take it. HSA.
All right. Okay, so Judy wrote in, how do I start an HSA? Are there different types, or do I just go to a bank and they'll know what I'm talking about? I have 1099 income, and later in the year, I will have income in my LLC with an S-Corp election with a non-married partner, and also plan to start a family management company. Do I start, pay for the HSA under my family management company? This is from Judy.
Well, Judy, anything else? World peace? Gosh, we're crying out loud. Okay. Jeez. Okay, so love what Judy's doing, folks. If you're creating 1099 income, you're going to want an S corporation or an LLC taxed as an S corp. That's ultimately where you're going to be headed. Judy's basically asking, I want to have a health savings account. How does it work in and coexist with my S corp? So here's the deal. Again, the HSA is independent of your business. Now, if we're doing an HRA or we're writing off your health insurance premiums or other topics, your business discussion is going to, your business structure and all that is going to matter in the discussion. But again, for anybody out there that wants a health savings account, this is a contribution that you make individually. It's like an IRA. Think of it like an IRA. So you'll pull money out of your business to fund it. That's cool. But it's a deduction on your 1040 on the front page, no matter what type of business you have. So pull the money out of your business. You don't need to do it through a family management company. You don't have to do it through an S-Corp. You don't have to do it through an LLC. Everybody out there, if you can, we'd love you to have a health savings account. It's like a supercharged IRA for healthcare. One of the main requirements is, though, you have to have a high deductible health insurance plan. And the government says, hey, if you're willing to go to the doctor and come out of pocket for some of the little things, we'll let you self-insure yourself with an HSA. That's the general concept. So, Judy, if you want an HSA, don't worry about where you put it in your business. Just find the money and fund it. If you're single, I think it's $3,400 this year, is $3,450. Anyway, could look it up any minute. But that's going to be approximately around $3,500 is your contribution. And you can open an HSA most anywhere. Wells Fargo got rid of theirs. It's now managed for Wells Fargo at Optimum Bank. Then there's you can walk into Chase. You can go online and find some sort of HSA online, and they'll give you a little debit card to go with it. But if you want to self-direct your HSA, like I've done with mine, and my little HSA owns this crappy little rental that cash flows in South Chicago, it is awesome. Any of you heard me talk about my little meth lab owned by my HSA? There's some irony there. But, no, this little rental just cash flows. My HSA created an LLC and bought a rental. So if you want to fund an HSA and then invest it in something other than a mutual fund that pays you 3% after all the fees, go to Vantage. We love Vantage. You can open up an HSA account with them online and fund it. And they'll call you on day two and say, Judy, what do you want to invest your HSA in? And you go, well, I got this little LLC I set up over at KQS Lawyers. Can you put it in there? Sure. Send us the docs. And then 3 days later, your $3,400, $3,500 that funded your HSA is now sitting in an LLC. You control the checkbook, and you can invest it and go buy Selena Gomez tickets for her 2017-18 tour and turn around and sell them on StubHub, double the money, and pay for your new root canal next year tax-free. Boom! Matt, did I take that home? That was like a slam.
Dude, you got a lot of miles out of that question. Man, that was good.
I did.
Now, if you're like, man, I'm not going to do all that. I just want to save on my health care. Okay, it is $3,400. That's right. That's the maximum amount you can put in if you're single. If you're family, it's $6,750. And this is what's cool about the HSA. I want to highlight this and again is you're getting a tax deduction when you put that money in. You don't phase out on it even if you're high income. So $3,400 single, $6,750. If you're married, we're spending a lot of this money already on healthcare. So if you're not investing enough to save, but you're like, crap, I'm spending this money on healthcare, great, put it in, get a tax deduction, spend it back out of the HSA. Anything you spend out of the HSA comes out tax-free. You don't pay any tax. And so you can be spending it out and effectively just getting a tax deduction on all the medical that you're using. And if you have extra money, get the meth lab rental like Mark Kohler. It's, you know, that's going to pay for his long-term care insurance, his Viagra and Cialis, all that stuff in the future years.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. That's full disclosure.
You never know. Just, you know, it's there if you need it. You never know.
Yeah, TMI. Okay, so now let's move on to a question from Jennifer. She says, now this is a big one, and this is tough. She says, Mark, I have a question about setting up scholarships for our kids. So right there on the face of it, Jennifer, it's like you're buckling down to climb Mount Everest. This is not an area for the faint-hearted. In trying to get some sort of write-off to pay for your kids' college, you can imagine families have been trying to figure this out for the last 100 years. So, so she says, 20 years ago, my family created a scholarship that was set up in memory and honor of my sister to award money at a specific high school for students who have hosted exchange students. The funds are dwindling down and have not been and we have not donated money to it for some years now. Since my kids have been host siblings twice now, and my kids are in middle and high school, I'd like this scholarship money to be available to them when they graduate. Well, but the money was there for exchange students, so you're changing the purpose of the scholarship, maybe, Jennifer. So right there, I'm a little concerned. Then she says, however, my kids do not attend the school where the scholarship is set up. Problem number two. I'm thinking there might be benefits to start funding the scholarship again or to start a new one at my kids' schools. Well, first of all, Jennifer, you have to comply with the current scholarship terms and the nonprofit that was set up for that scholarship, which is what a scholarship fund is, a nonprofit. And if the money runs out, the scholarship closes down. But you have to stick with the terms of that scholarship. It's very hard to just change it without getting IRS approval to do that. And especially if you're trying to change it to, quote, help your kids. How do you think that's going to fly, Jennifer? Not good. So her last ditch effort was, should I start a new one at my kids' schools? How do I create the scholarship in a high school for my kids that attend? Is this wise? And paying for my kids' college, would it help? Or what are the benefits? What are the downsides? Oof. So, Jennifer, this would be the purpose of a good half hour to an hour consultation with me or one of our CPAs that can work on this type of topic and nonprofits. It's a tricky one.
Yeah,
I tell you, you're fighting an uphill battle with all of my resources, and I say that humbly, and I'm grateful for our accounting firm and law firm and everything I've been through for 20 years getting here. I don't even have one of these because I don't – whenever you're trying to – here's the issue, folks, and I'll summarize with this. If you're trying to create a nonprofit or a scholarship, great. Make the world a better place. Oh, but you want to make it so it helps your kids? Okay. Do you think on the face of that that's going to work? It's generally not. And so –
yeah,
we're going to have other strategies that could help you. I take wonderful tax write-offs for helping my kids get through college, but I don't do it through a scholarship. Anyway, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, I think because there's two ways you really have a scholarship. One is you, as Mark said, you form your own nonprofit. But in the nonprofit application and questionnaire and your annual reports, you have to indicate how that nonprofit is benefiting, you know, the public or whether it's benefiting people who established the nonprofit and who are contributing to it. If it's benefiting the people and their family who contributed to it, you're going to lose the nonprofit status. Therefore, the money you're putting in is not going to – you're not going to get a tax deduction. It's pretty much just like you're just paying for your kids to go to college. So that's the first point I'd say on that. The second way you could fund a scholarship is directly through the university. You know, the or universities or colleges, they have programs and you're paying into the university and getting a deduction through them, but they all have policies that you're not going to be able to control who the money goes to when it's your own family or related parties. And so that, you know, all the universities, they have to restrict that in order for the scholarship programs to work effectively. So I agree. Sounds like you're in an uphill battle. I mean, I want to tell you, I even Googled this as Mark was talking there. I didn't find anything.
Now,
that was kind of a joke
again,
there, guys.
For our live listeners, and thank you so much for being with us. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, please do at 646-668-8326. you need to call from your real phone number with your real caller ID and your real name. We've had hecklers come on with a IPI address that is a little more mysterious. So I apologize, but we're generally not going to pick up those calls in respect to our other listeners. So make sure you do that from your cell line or home line, and we might have you jump right on. Okay, now this is from John. You've mentioned charging order protection on your show. How is this a good thing? If you can't make distributions to yourself, whoa, who said that? How can you access the money from the business? I'm probably not understanding this 100%. Matt, do you want to take a stab, or should I kind of explain charging orders? Your call. I'll give you first stab at it if you want.
Yeah, I'll take a swing at this. So think about charging orders. This sometimes refer to this as COPES, Charging Order Protection Entity. Usually we will use a Wyoming LLC. And when you think about liability protection, there's kind of two ways you come at this. Just I want to keep this in perspective. You have what we call inside liability and outside liability. Inside liability is what most people are trying to protect. This is a liability that happens inside the business. For example, I have an LLC that owns a rental property in Arizona. The tenant sues me. They're going to be forced to sue the LLC. They can't come to me personally. I have an LLC. I'm getting that liability protection. That's called inside liability. And every state has this. You're going to get that inside liability protection for an LLC or really a corporation, no matter where you're at. That's the corporate veil protection. Now, there's an opposite scenario, though, of what's outside liability. Let's say the opposite scenario happens. Let's say I default on a credit card and I get a judgment against me personally, and I got some creditor chasing down me personally. It's a judgment against my personal name. And they come to my assets and they see, oh, Matt doesn't have any assets in his personal name. He's put all of his assets into this LLC. Now, this is an outside liability, and they're trying to get in the business to get the assets out of the business. It's usually not what we're typically trying to protect, but for some people that have a lot of personal liability, this could be an important consideration, or for, frankly, with people with just a lot of assets. Now, every state does not treat single-member LLCs, like if it's just me that's the only owner in the LLC, does not give any protection to you in that scenario. So if I have a judgment against Matt personally, they could get into the LLC that I own 100% of in Arizona and force me to sell the assets. Now, there are some states, such as Wyoming, which is typically what we would use, that are called charging order protection entities that prevent a creditor to come into the LLC to force the sale of assets. And sometimes we'll use that Wyoming entity as a holding entity of sorts that then owns all your other LLCs in the other states where you may have properties or assets. So it effectively prevents them from coming upward into your entities to force the sale of your assets. All right, so now it's the legal groundwork in order to put context to this question.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the question is, this charging order protection, what happens is, let's say that I have that scenario. I had the creditor, I defaulted on a credit card. They're coming after me. I have this charging order protection entity. I got my Wyoming LLC, and they get this charging order against the company. What that means is they can't come into the entity. They can't force me to sell the assets. They can't force me to drain the bank account to pay them. They just sit there, and the terms of that charging order say, if I take money out of the LLC and I want to pay myself personally, I have to first pay the creditor. I can't take money out. And so the question was, well, what benefit is that? The money is essentially locked up. Well, this is true. That is definitely a weakness to the charging order. You can't just drain it or pull money out as you may need it. But the creditor can't force you to do it either. So you're kind of you're in control, so to speak, and it puts you in a very strong position to negotiate with the creditor to say, hey, you can't touch me. My assets are here. You're going to sit there until I decide to pull the money out. So do you want to cut a deal? Can we settle this for a fraction of what the judgment really is? And then you can unlock the money from the LLC to pay them, you know, in a settlement. That's practically the value of it in the end.
Well, I love it. And great answer, Matt. Nothing to add to it. I will say this. For those that are thinking, wow, do I need this extra level of protection, a COPE entity, COPE? Wow, this is deep. Wyoming, what the heck? folks. We don't even bring this up with our clients unless they have, you know, $1 million worth of equity in rental property, maybe 10 properties, 15 properties. I don't know. If you're going to a seminar, I'm not kidding, today, an hour before this show, there was a student that got sucked into $90,000 of education costs with a company traveling around the country selling their crap because their leader was a fix and flipper on some home network show and got sold multiple entities, multiple structures out of their stupid Nevada co-partner, out of a cubicle in Nevada, selling them all this, not even caring. The guy may only have two rental properties. $90,000 later. But he got to attend their huge mastermind group in a penthouse in Vegas, and they flew in for it. It was sick to my stomach. People, if you're getting pitched these elaborate protection structures and you're just getting started, please call us before they swipe your card. Please. You may think, well, I don't want to pay Mark $400 an hour. Are you kidding me? Not all of our team members are this much per rate. I can save you 50 times that, avoiding a nightmare of years of way too much money spent doing the wrong thing because you just paid me for an hour of time. I know you want to get rich. I know you want to make money. And these presentations and seminars sound so sexy. And you're going to be rich just like the guy or gal up on the stage. But get a second opinion. It is a jungle out there. Matt, I didn't plan on saying that, but it's just every week, do not encounter someone in that travesty.
It's sad. It's sad. People getting, you know, just don't buy the big elaborate structure unless you're ready for it. And, you know, we'll have clients that have, you know, 20 entities or they, you know, they're spending tens of thousands of dollars for legal services, but they have, you know, 20 properties. They've got the business that justifies that type of planning and structure. So, you'd think we'd be on the other end of that saying, do more planning, more entities, more of this, you know. We think you just have to have a practical, pragmatic approach to it. And, definitely get a second opinion. We're not going to oversell you on stuff crap you don't need.
Yeah. And I wish we could just list off the names of these companies that do this to people, but as you can imagine, putting that on a public forum like this could create liability for us because they can sue us just because they feel like we're slandering them. So, but if you want to call me personally, I'll just tell you personal facts and situations, and you can decide what you want to do. But we've got great companies we work with for education, training, and that's affordable and it has integrity. Okay, this is from Kathy. She says, I love your open forum shows. After listening to them and attending some of your seminars, my husband and I met with you several years ago, and you helped us change our investment strategies and the way we view and handle many of our financial options and decisions. Thanks, Kathy. She says, she goes on to summarize her situation. She manages 3 or 4 rentals. Her husband has a day job, and he's going to retire in about 4 years. Woohoo, she says. but at that point, we need to pay for health insurance premiums and then Medicare premiums and supplements. Kathy's got a concern of health care premiums once her husband retires. This is her concern. I'm summarizing because she's a little verbose here. Bless your heart, Kathy. And she says, her questions are, when my husband retires, is it possible that our real estate business, which is these 3 or 4 rentals, could pay the health insurance premiums and help us with health care? Is really her question. And Kathy, keep in mind, you already have a business. You should already have a business entity. You already have 3 or 4 rentals. It's not that you're going to set up a business when he retires and then all of a sudden you're going to have a business entity when he retires. You should already have a business entity and you have a business. We don't want to overdo it, but you've got a structure. The question is, can it pay for healthcare premiums when he does retire? And what are you going to do on the Obama healthcare exchange or what's going to exist? Kathy, boy, if we knew the answer to what healthcare is going to look like in 4 years from now, we'd be sitting in a, you know, some sort of, you know, mansion in Washington, D.C. with all expense paid, you know, life care. So, you know, no one knows what it's going to look like. Yeah, so here's what I say you do. And this is for anybody listening, especially if you're coming up on retirement and you're scared about how am I going to pay for this stuff. Keep building your businesses. Folks, Matt and I combined do probably over 2,000 consultations a year. That's only an average of 3 or 4 a day for each of us. We meet over 2,000 clients like you throughout the year, and we see themes. We see examples of success and examples of failure. And our successful clients stay committed, slowly but surely, not getting rich quick, buying a rental every year, starting to build, continuing to build their business, build some other source of income, multiple sources of income, so that when retirement comes, you've got something else to fall back upon other than just maybe a measly 401k or a little Social Security. Keep building your entrepreneur. Don't stop at 3 rentals, Cassie. Cassie, I want you to have 6 3 years from now. And then we can look at what the future may hold after that. 60 years old is young. You've got a lot of years in front of you. So stay committed to small business. There's a lot in your future to do. So, Matt, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, just, of course, Medicare, you know, 65 when you'll qualify for that. There's Part A and Part B. Part A you get for free, so don't stress about that. That's kind of your hospital coverage. Part B is kind of an optional thing you can add to Medicare that kind of circles around more standard from medical insurance if you've been buying that yourself. But the standard premium on that's $134. It's income-based, so if you're high income, you're going to pay more. But the standard premium amount's $134. So it's not a huge cost. I know you're concerned about cost. Then you also, of course, have prescription drug, which is Part D. You think the government would make this easier, but that's another optional thing you can add. But it is affordable. And so don't stress. I just wanted to get that out there if people are listening to this question and thinking, crap, I got to worry about paying for my health care now at a late age. But Medicare is there. You paid into it for over the years. The additional coverage you add on for prescription drugs or for the Part B is reasonably priced. So don't stress.
Yeah. And your business can pay for it. Okay, let's hit maybe two last questions quickly here. This is from Danielle. Hey, Mark and Matt, I am a Renatus community member living in Chicago. Now, this is one we love to talk about on the show without having a sick feeling in our stomach, and that is Renatus, a company helping educate people around the country with integrity and not overselling people. Just love them. So any of our Renatus listeners, thank you so much for letting us be a part of your life. Danielle says, it was great to see you in person, Mark, a few weeks ago. One of Mark's tax strategies is to create a small business. yes, we've been talking about that.
Like the number one.
Number one, baby. Yeah. We got to do that. I have a nonprofit organization that I started about 3 years ago. Does that qualify as a small business? No. Right there, no. A nonprofit is a great way. I'm sorry, I just cut to the chase. A nonprofit's wonderful. If you've got the money and you want to put tennis shoes on kids in Costa Rica or help kids have affordable lunches and a reservation in Arizona, great. Do it. Start a nonprofit anywhere in the planet. But that is not a small business. That's not helping you build wealth. It's not helping you get tax deductions in your life. It's a nonprofit, hence the word. Nonprofit to you. But it's a good thing if you can afford it. Wait to start your nonprofit. Bill Gates for 15 years said, hey, when I start a nonprofit, you're going to see it. Don't call me not charitable. But I'm going to do it and do it right when the time's right. Even he waited to the right time. So, folks, don't jump into a nonprofit out of the gate when you're financially not able to handle that. Get your own affairs in order first. Then you can go down the nonprofit route. Give us a call, David, if you want to go that path. We help nonprofits get set up. But anyway, Matt, do you have a question? Or you want me to throw one at you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, this is from Ben, and he says, I buy and sell properties frequently. I'm stuck with paying earned income taxes because of dealer status. Are there ways I could retain capital gains benefits? I'm thinking of land trusts and this and that. Oh, well done, Ben. So, Ben, we have a fixer and flipper. We got a fixer and flipper paying way too much in self-employment taxes, and we love these types of folks. What could he do better?
All right, so your best option to save on taxes, because you're getting creamed, I know, you're paying regular income tax because you're having short-term capital gain, plus you're paying self-employment tax. The best strategy is to use an S corporation. That's going to at least save you on the self-employment taxes. But if you're making, let's say, $90,000 of net income, you may save about $10,000 in self-employment taxes by doing an S corporation per year. That's your first option. There's no way to be long-term capital gains. The land trust is a waste of time. That's an oversold, not really relevant and helpful tool. But we would go S corporation for you doing short-term flips, getting creamed on self-employment tax, as you probably are.
Yeah, and he even throws in a second option. Should I consider a limited partnership? Wouldn't this be better? And am I going to? And then he throws out, could I get capital gains somehow? No, no, no. So, Ben, he says, how about setting up an LLC as a general partner or a single member or a limited partner? No, you've been listening to, again, these fly-by-night folks that want to sell sexy structures that probably aren't even lawyers. Again, stick with the tried and true, and which is still phenomenal, and many people find this cutting edge. Stick with the S corporation for your flips. Use the LLCs for your rentals. Don't mess around with a limited partnership. Let's see what structure you have now. He says, I've got an LLC, Real B LLC. Well, let's talk about S election. So, Ben, set up a consult with any of our five attorneys, and we can get the right structure, maybe even backdated, to the first of this year so that you're off to the races. Boy, just in the last, let's see, how many seconds do we have left? In 3 minutes, Matt, I'm going to throw an IRA one at you. This is from Tom.
All right.
I recently opened a self-directed IRA with the intent of buying and funding a private loan. So he wanted to set up an IRA to loan someone money. I didn't get the self-directed IRA open soon enough, and I had to fund the private loan with my own money. Can I now sell the note to my self-directed IRA at face value, or is this self-dealing and thus not allowed?
The answer is no. Do not sell the note that you made personally and you funded personally over to your IRA. That would be a prohibited transaction. You would no longer have an IRA. So definitely do not do that. Sorry, if you didn't get the IRA set up in time and you've decided to fund it personally, you're stuck in that personally. But the IRA is ready for the next one, sounds like.
Yeah. And Karen asks, how can I have a strong debt-to-income ratio when using all the tax deductions available, which lowers my IRS income? So, Mark, you give all these great strategies, but then I go to the bank and I look like I'm poor and I'm saving taxes, but I need to get a good lender to help me. And thanks for your insights. And she says, particularly in Utah. So, Karen, it is true. We want to make you look great in front of the IRS and terrible for your banker is what sometimes it happens. But if you have the right type of banker that can add back personal expenses, depreciation, and this is where the stated income loan 10 years ago helped the entrepreneur, because you could show, hey, look at all this money coming in my bank account, and yeah, my tax return looks like crap, but that's because I don't want to pay so much in taxes. That's good for you and me. And the bank would say, sure, let's get you into our stated income program. But here's the deal: they still exist. Stated income loans are still out there. But when you walk into the corner bank and talk to that 19-year-old across the desk that just started at the bank 3 weeks ago, and they're looking at the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guidelines, you look like you just stepped off of a rocket ship from Mars, right? And this is how entrepreneurs are treated at your average bank. So we can send you some bank recommendations. Please give me an email, and we'll see what we can do there to help you there. Matt, you want to take us out? Any final thoughts before we get rolling?
No, but thanks everybody for all the questions, especially the self-directed IRA ones. But, please keep sending in your questions. We have open forum once a month where we take the opportunity to answer your questions. And call in if you're like, hey, you guys didn't get to my question. Call in next time. You always get first priority. We'll be back next week with another amazing episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, everyone. We love you. We appreciate you. Don't give up. Keep working hard.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.